Welcome to the Hills Baptist Podcast. We're so glad you're joining us as we see Jesus glorified, lives transformed, and hope revealed in the Adelaide Hills and beyond. We hope you enjoy this message.
So firstly, I'm a child of God and a follower of Jesus, and I'd just like to really emphasize those things. Child of God means something that no matter what happens, He loves me, and I can look to Him for that. And a follower of Jesus, Jesus is the purpose, is the one who guides my life, and I endeavor to follow Him in all that I do. Sometimes I even succeed, but those things. I hold a fairly, you want to know who's this guy talking up here, I hold a fairly conventional set of Christian beliefs. So think something like the Apostles' Creed, if you're familiar with that, or the Lausanne Convention, if you really want to impress somebody to say that you've ever heard of it or read of it. But that set of beliefs are probably pretty standard to most of you, okay, in terms of what I believe in that space. I'm 62 years old. Ooh, that hurts. I'm the husband of Kathy, which doesn't hurt. That's actually a great thing. She's an outstanding wife. I have 4 children, 10 grandchildren, and we also have a family of 3 that sort of joins everything in our family. So when we get together for family dinner at our house in Heathfield, which is where we live in Stirling, it's 23. Now that's bigger than the country town that I grew up in, and so I often look around and think, my oh my. But I grew up in a country town in South Australia. I moved to Adelaide when I studied, which and I studied engineering, and then I carved out a career in the oil and gas industry and retired just in the middle of last year. So, you know, that's a little bit of that history. The things that I like and we like doing, I really like most sports, especially football and cycling. I played a lot of football, way too much, and my body is fairly damaged from all of that, but it was all worth it, wasn't it, Kathy? Absolutely. That's what she says if ever I complain about any of my body ailments. She just said it was worth it, remember? And I say, yes, it was. And we move on. But and we really like camping and road trips when we get the chance to do that stuff. Kathy and I have attended Hills Baptist Church for about 30 years. We've served in lots of different roles there, over the journey of that 30 years. But we have spent some time away too, and we spent some time in Queensland and most recently in Papua New Guinea. But we're back and doing that. But a little bit of our history too that's quite important in the spiritual realm is about 30 years ago, we actually came back from Kuwait kicking and screaming because we'd gone there with a view to be missionaries to the Middle East long term. And it was really difficult to come back. And we felt like failures, and we felt that we were broken and disillusioned and upset. And I think Kathy was better, but I was pretty upset with God. But God can redeem the most amazing things. And these days, Kathy and I, 30 years later, here we are, involved with individuals, groups, and churches in the Middle East and North Africa again. Just what God is doing in that space is amazing. And you'll hear a bit more about that during Missions May, so that's coming your way. I mentioned earlier it's a great joy for Kathy and I to be here, and especially amongst this group of people, because when this congregation was formed, Kathy and I prayed long and hard about whether we'd actually part of that. And it was one of those times when God said, not now. So we just let that be. And once again, what do you know? I don't know how many years later, 7, 8 is it? How long has this congregation been here? Oh, only 3. Only 3 years. Oh, it seems longer. Seems longer. But here we are. And, God has His plans, and here we are. And at that time, and I believe at this, so that's great. But we better get on to today's message. So today, we're in a block about Exodus, and today we're going to be covering Exodus chapters 11 to 18. Now, I don't know if that scares you, but in my Bible, that is 9 pages. Okay? So I reckon we're going to finish at about 3:15 on Wednesday afternoon. Settle in. No, that's not what we're going to do. We are going to land in a couple of spots on this. There's a great story in here. But first, I want to just tell you, just give a little bit of history of where we are in the series that we're doing at the moment on consecration. We're rolling through Exodus in 9 weeks. This is week 3. So one third of the way through, okay? So the week 1, we had an introduction from Dave and he had 5 R's, if you remember, for those who are listening, just to try and give you a bit of a memory. You don't have to remember the 5 R's, don't worry. The only one I remember was relinquishment, because that meant taking off your shoes, which I really like to do. In fact, I couldn't do it that day because I wasn't wearing any. But here I am today, unrelinquished again, unfortunately. But there were 5 R's, and he spoke to those with the introduction to this series on consecration. For those of you for whom consecration is a big word that doesn't sound familiar to you, think set apart is probably the easiest, simplest definition. There'll be theologians who'll give you a far more complex, but let's think set apart for now in terms of consecration. And then last week, Tony spoke, and he spoke about the Exodus story and 9 plagues and what that meant in relation to the gods of Egypt and what that looked like. And then he spoke about consecration and compromise, and especially in the last 3 plagues, about how Pharaoh was trying to compromise and how Moses didn't allow what God had for him to be compromised in that way. This week we're going to be talking about Exodus chapters 11 through to really only 14. So you're going to have to read chapters 15 through 18 all for yourself. But we're going to be talking to that, which is really the stories of the 10th plague, how the Israelites left Egypt, and then the deliverance that God gave them in the Passover as well. Just what's ahead, just to give you a little bit of a look of what's coming up your way, in the second block, blocks 4 to 6, it'll be Exodus 19 to 31, and that's really about being ambassadors for God. So when you're set apart, we're set apart to be his ambassadors. So that's going to be the key theme that's coming your way there. And in the third block, in weeks 6, 7 to 9, the last 3 chapters of Exodus, it's actually going to be about how God has revealed his holiness to restore people after failure. So that's what's coming your way. But we're in week 3, and there's 2 great stories here. There's the 10th plague, which was threatened in chapter 11, and as part of what we're doing, we're not going to read that, and the Passover. And this is followed by the Exodus, or the departure. The departure from the land of Egypt to the land that God was giving to them. In that story is the story of the Israelites walking through the Red Sea. In actual fact, that's the sermon that Tony was going to preach today. But I thought, I'm not going to wreck it. He gave me the bones of it. Actually looks really good. I thought, I'll probably only wreck that. I'll leave that for him to have in his pocket for a rainy day so he can take that away. If ever someone gets sick like me when I'm due to preach and he needs to, he can just pull that out and say, here we go. But that's looking great. But we're going to talk about these 2 stories, the Passover and the Exodus, in a very simple way. And we're going to do it in reverse order. I hope that's legal. But I figured that if they could do it in Star Wars, where there's a prequel, if they could do it in The Hunger Games, where there's a prequel, and if they can do it in The Lord of the Rings, where there's a prequel, The Hobbit, we can do it here today as well. So we're actually going to have a story, and then we're going to have the prequel. These stories are familiar to many of us. But we're going to tell the story, because one of the key things today, actually, you're going to hear me say many, many times, you'll be sick of it, is tell the story. Remember. And it would be funny if that was the key message of today and we didn't tell the story. So there's actually a lot of Bible reading today, and we have a fantastic person called Simon who's going to help us with that. But Simon, you just have to wait just a small moment. He's very enthusiastic. Fantastic. So I just want to give you a reminder of where we're at in the story to date before we get to this reading, okay? And that is, the people of Israel have been in slavery for 430 years. That's a really long time. In those days, that's 11 generations. It's a really long time. And in actual fact, it's probably more than 11 sets of parents. You can probably double that. It's probably 20 sets of parents, or close to, in that time. They've been there for a long time. In slavery. They've actually grown enormously in number while they've been under this duress. Enormously in number. But they were under great duress, and their cry was heard by God. And he raised up Moses through an amazing circumstance. He saved him from certain death through an amazing circumstance and kept him and appointed him to be the leader of the people. In fact, he did it through an amazing journey where Moses was not only saved, but he became Egyptian nobility until he stuffed it and killed somebody and then spent 40 years in the desert wondering what the heck had happened to this call of God that he'd felt was on his life, until one day he's wandering around in the and he sees, can anyone tell me? A burning bush. There's a burning bush, remember? That spoke out. Didn't have a mouth, but it spoke. I'm a bush. And so, and then Moses went to Pharaoh, and there were 9 plagues that we spoke about. And each time there was a plague, the Egyptians missed out. The Israelites missed out. The Egyptians suffered the plagues, the Israelite missed out. Today, we're up to the 10th plague. What do you reckon? I'm tipping the Israelites are going to miss out again, but we'll see. So, Simon, I'm going to get you to come up and read the story of deliverance, and then we're actually going to hear a story from Paul.
I'll use this mic.
Okay.
Exodus 12, 33 to 42. The Egyptians were urgent with the people to send them out of the land in haste, for they said, "We shall all be dead." So the people took their dough before it was leavened, their kneading bowls before being bound up in their cloaks on their shoulders. The people of Israel had also done as Moses told them, for they had asked the Egyptians for silver and gold jewelry and for clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they let them have what they asked. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. And the people of Israel journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. A mixed multitude also went up with them, and very much livestock, both flocks and herds. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough that they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were thrust out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared any provisions for themselves. The time that the people of Israel lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of 430 years, on the very day, all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. It was a night of watching by the Lord to bring them out of the land of Egypt. So this same night is a night of watching kept to the Lord by all the people of Israel throughout their generations.
So just stop there for a minute, Simon. Just to say that what happens next is chapter 13. And it's a description of how they travel from Egypt to the edge of the Red Sea, with a cloud to guide them by day and a pillar of fire by night. And then we come to chapter 14, which is where Simon's going to read from next.
When Pharaoh drew near, the people of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them, and they feared greatly. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Is it because there are no graves in Egypt that you had taken us away to die in the wilderness? What have you done to us in bringing us out of Egypt? Is not this what we said to you in Egypt? Leave us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians. For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." And Moses said to the people, "Fear not. Stand firm and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall never see again. The Lord will fight for you, and you only have only to be silent." The Lord said to Moses, "Why do you cry to me? Tell the people of Israel to go forward. Lift up your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it, that the people of Israel may go through the sea on dry ground. And I'll harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they shall go in after them. And I'll get glory over Pharaoh and all his host, his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord when I have gotten glory over Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord drove the sea back by a strong east wind all night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the people of Israel went into the midst of the sea on dry ground, and the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. The Egyptians pursued and went in after them into the midst of the sea, all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and his horsemen. And in the morning watch, the Lord in the pillar of fire and of cloud looked down on the Egyptian forces and threw the Egyptian forces into a panic, clogging their chariot wheels so that they drove heavily. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from before Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the water may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen." So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the sea returned to its normal course when the morning appeared. And as the Egyptians fled into it, the Lord threw the Egyptians into the midst of the sea. The waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen. Of all the hosts of Pharaoh that had followed them into the sea, not one of them remained. But the people of Israel walked on dry ground through the sea, the waters being a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Thus the Lord saved Israel that day from the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Israel saw the great power that the Lord used against the Egyptians, so the people feared the Lord, and they believed in the Lord and in his servant Moses.
So that's the story of how God delivered the Israelites from the land and slavery in Egypt, and out of a dangerous situation into something that, where they're actually trapped. So their situation in front of the Red Sea is they're actually trapped. They've got the Red Sea one side and Pharaoh's army behind, and yet God delivered them with an amazing, mighty act. We're going to hear a story from Paul about how God has helped deliver him from a situation of great peril.
Thanks. Just for those that don't know me, my clothing is not part of the prop. We've got a bike show on down the street today. And a bunch of my fellow bikers will be down there. But Craig's asked me to just share a story of danger and God's saving. I need to paint a bit of a picture for you. So back in 2000, I was over in Cambodia. There'd been a major disaster had come through, and I was over there helping with a mission that I was involved with at the time. Clean-up operation, some pretty horrific stuff there. The Mekong River had risen 11 metres. The water had come down from China somewhere. It wasn't even a local flood. It had just come down. They had no idea it was coming. Back in 2000, Cambodia was quite a dangerous place for a white man to be. I'll just put that in there as well. While I was there, there was a guy, he'd been stripped naked, shot 7 times in the back, and it was in the papers that it was suicide. This is how corrupt it was. The government was very corrupt at the time. I haven't been back to check on how it's going, but it was very, very corrupt. There was some terrible things going on politically. There were soldiers everywhere. I had a few incidents and episodes that involved guns. But anyway, I'd been there for about 6 weeks, 6-7 weeks, and where our mission was in a little village called Araksat, which is on the opposite side of the river to Phnom Penh. Now, out front of Phnom Penh, the Mekong River comes down and the Tonle Sap River comes down, and they actually cross. Now, because the Mekong was in such huge flood, when these two rivers cross, there's a lot of turbulence in the middle. The only way you can get across was by a ferry. Now, when I say ferry, it's not like, you know, the Murray. These ferries are basically what we remember boat people coming over trying to get to Australia in. They're a big old wooden boat with a massive diesel engine in the middle of it. Second story has a roof over the middle and a little sort of table slash seat in the middle. Now, when I went across the ferry, it was always busy, it was bustling, there was people taking their goods across to markets and all of that sort of thing. It was always a very busy ferry, but I used to go up the top because, one, I couldn't fit downstairs because they build things for themselves, and Cambodians are typically around about 5 foot tall. So down here somewhere, Tangi. Not Tangi's height. Very typical height for a Cambodian. So they tend to build things for themselves, not for big blokes like myself. So I used to go upstairs onto the top deck because this roof in the middle didn't reach out to the sides, and I would sit on the edge. I could sort of get a good view of what was going on. It's just a thing with me. I like to know what people are doing. I'm a people watcher, but I also like to know what's coming. And so I was up. I needed to go across the ferry on this particular day, and 9 times out of 10, when we went across the river, there was 2 or 3 of us would go, but on this particular day, I decided I needed to go across. I think I had to deliver something or whatever. I don't know, but I'd gone down to the ferry a little bit early, so everyone had got off the ferry, and I'm sitting up top. And I'm thinking, this is weird. There's no one on the ferry yet. And anyway, I'm looking around and I'm watching the people in the village bustling and carrying on, and I thought they'll start getting on soon, you know. Anyway, it was just about time for the boat to go, and I thought something's not right. And I just heard God say, just stay and stay calm. And it was very clear. Just as he said that to me, just as I really sensed that, because I'd thought something's definitely going on here. About 20, 25 soldiers rocked up. AK-47s, the bullet belts, the whole kit that they carry. And they just appeared out of the jungle and walked onto the boat. But God just reassured me to stay calm. And I mean, naturally I am calm in a crisis, but it was a bit hairy. All these guys got on, and they didn't just go downstairs. They'd obviously seen me, and they all came upstairs and piled all their guns in front of me on the table and sat all around me. So, you know, a little bit intimidating. But I just kept calm. I just kind of looked at the scenery. I made sure I didn't make eye contact with anybody. I didn't want to upset anybody, you know. But the boat took off straight away. So I'm on the boat. No one else on this boat. You think about the people that have gone missing in the last few weeks. There's a lot going on, but I just stayed calm. And I'm just looking at the scenery. The boat's taken off, so I'm looking where we're going. These guys are joking. They're laughing. They're pointing at me. They've got, you know, thoughts in mind. I'll just say that. What they didn't know is that in those 6 or 7 weeks, I'd learnt a fair bit of Cambodian because there were no white people there. It was a major disaster. All the white people that had lived there had left. It was just me and my mate John over there. And so I was very much on my own over there. And so you have to learn the language, and you learn quick when you need to communicate and there's no one else to talk to. So, but they didn't know that. They just assumed that I've got no idea what they're talking about, and they're having a good old laugh about this freakishly tall guy with, at the time, I had long hair, long beard. I'd been playing Jesus in the plays back in Australia. Anyway, we were 20 minutes into the trip. I need to tell you this too. It was nearly 6 kilometres across the river at the time. You'd think of a river, two rivers crossing, all this turbulence in the middle. It was quite a, you know, it wasn't just a simple boat ride. And I've got 20 odd soldiers giving me a hard time, basically. But they think I've got no idea what they're saying. Anyway, 20 minutes in, we're about, 5 minutes away from the other shore. God tells me to point out one of the guys and call him to me. Now, I didn't want to do that. but to tell you, this, I mean, like I say, Cambodians are short, but this guy was very short. He was the shortest one there. I called him out in Cambodian and I told him to come here. Now, the first thing is, all of these little black people suddenly realised that I knew everything that they were saying, which I didn't. But it was like, far out, he knows what we're talking about. And then this little guy comes forward. Now, I'll kind of demonstrate a little bit, because I'm sitting on this edge of the boat, and he comes towards me, and I'm looking him in the eye, okay? So he's very short. And I called him to me and I said, come here, you, come here. And he comes forward and all these guys had gone quiet. You know, I had their attention. And he's standing here like this. And I stood up underneath the thing. So I had to then bend down and go around the veranda sort of thing on the top, and they all just cracked up laughing, and all the attention was turned to him. And you know, I was kind of making a bit of a joke, but then I sat back down, and they're, you know, like, they're all laughing, they're having a joke, I mean, at one point I had an AK-47 in my hands, and this, you know, things changed a lot. The environment changed. Now, I honestly believe that they didn't intend for me to get off the boat in the conventional manner. But God used me, the fact that I'm calm, the fact that I like to have a bit of a joke, and the fact that I do hear God's voice, to save me in that situation. Things obviously changed a lot, but because I was in tune with what God was saying, and it was a scary situation. There you go.
Great, thanks for that, Paul. You know, it's great to have that. And like I was saying before, no, I don't need that. You might hear a great sermon from Tony on those passages. But now we're going to have the second story, and this is the prequel. So that was the story of deliverance, but something happened before they had that amazing experience at the Red Sea. And that is, you know, we're going to have this story of what we call the Passover. And there's a good reason for doing it in this order today, because it's a communion Sunday. And so really, a lot of this is going to be leading us into that time of communion. But the prequel to that deliverance story is the story of the 10th plague and the Passover, and Simon's going to read that for us now.
one jumps around a little bit. Hopefully you can follow along. So we'll start at Genesis 12, verse 3. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month, when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill their lambs at twilight. Then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are, and when I see the blood I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord. Throughout your generations, as a statute forever, you shall keep it as a feast. Then Moses called all the elders of Israel and said to them, go and select lambs for yourselves according to your clans and kill the Passover lamb. Take a bunch of hyssop and dip it in the blood that is in the basin and touch the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. None of you shall go out of the door of his house until the morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and will not allow the destroyer to enter your houses to strike you. You shall observe this rite as a statute for you and for your sons forever. Then the people of Israel went and did so, as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon and all the firstborn of the livestock.
So there we have it. It's the story of the Passover. And ever since that time, Jews have told that story. At least every year. To this day, Jews celebrate the Passover. They've been telling the story for 2,500 years now. 2,500 years. Three and a half thousand years. As we read through this passage, we hear the instruction. This day shall be for you a memorial day, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord through the generations as a statute forever. This is the Passover. Verse 24, you shall observe this rite as a statute for you and your sons forever. And we didn't read it, but in chapter 13, again, verse 8, tell your son on that day, it's because of what the Lord did for me when I came out of Egypt. And in other places as well, over and over again, there's this instruction to tell the story of the Passover. Tell the story. Remember. Tell the story, remember who the Lord is. Tell the story, remember what he has done. Tell the story how he rescued you from certain destruction and brought you to a wonderful place. For the religious people of Jesus' day, there were three big stories that gave shape to their identity and their beliefs and their practices. And those three stories were the story of creation and then the fall of man with sin coming into the world and the institution of sacrifice for sin. So this is the story of where do we come from? You know, how did man exist? How did we come to be the kind of people that we are? The second big story is the story of Abraham and what happens with Abraham and in actual fact, the fact that God gave Abraham a promise that his descendants would be a nation, but it would be a nation that would bless all nations. This is a big story that shaped their identity. was that they are children of Abraham. And the third big story is the Exodus that formed their beliefs and their practices that shaped what they did. It's the Exodus. Tell the story. Remember how God saved you. And remember how he brought you to a land flowing in milk and honey. And that's pretty much it. The other things that the Jews formed their identity with. The stories that formed their identity. Where we come from, why we're special to God, and how he has shown us his love and deliverance. And how we got the rules that we live by. So the Israelites knew where they came from. Part of their story tells them about their very existence and then their formation as a nation and even then to a position of being in this place of helpless slavery. They knew that they were special to God because God had spoken years before to say, "You're special to me, you're a chosen people." And then he demonstrated that they were special through this special act of deliverance. He showed them that way. And the Jews knew the rules they had to get to live by. And this actually came to them through the Exodus. As the Exodus was happening, God was revealing through Moses, firstly the Ten Commandments, and then everything that you read in the first five books of the Old Testament. They learned about what it was to what was right and wrong, but they also learned how to pay for those things that they did wrong, how to atone for the things that had gone wrong. And that was through sacrifice of animals, by and large. But the instruction here was tell the story, the Passover story. There's an element here of keeping it simple. Remember these things about God. Remember these things about God. Remember who he is. Remember his promises. Remember his deliverance. And why is it so simple? You know what? Sometimes I think we want to make things complex. We want to understand the complexities of everything that's around or within our faith. But sometimes I think God's instruction to us would be keep it simple. Remember the primary things. And one of the reasons for that, and why did he want to tell them over and over? He actually wanted that to change their focus in a long-term way. Not a short-term way, a long-term way. He wanted to keep the focus. Remember what I have done for you. So one of the areas that I think I've grown on recently in my spiritual life is just focusing on transformation. Focusing on transformation. In Baptist churches, we're really good at teaching. Say that in a humble way. But we are. We're actually really good at teaching. And we're really good at being taught. We actually like sitting there listening. You're doing a fantastic job, you people, because you're really good at it. You've done a lot of it. But what one thing I would say is teaching brings knowledge, but it doesn't necessarily bring change. It brings knowledge, but it doesn't bring change. Just like age brings experience, but it doesn't bring wisdom. That's supposed to sound really wise, just in case you were wondering, okay? Age doesn't bring experience. I mean, age brings experience, but not necessarily wisdom. Teaching brings knowledge, but not necessarily change. What God wants for us is change into a heart that is focused on him. I don't think God minds if we rinse and repeat those things that are very precious and core to our faith. In fact, I think he loves it. Because when we rinse and repeat those things that are core to our faith, it goes deep. And when things go deep, they bring change. I actually think it's hard to grow your character in an instant. Very rarely does growth of character happen quickly. It doesn't happen if I call you out the front and says, "Who would like to grow in character today? Please raise your hand. Please come down the front. And let's pray that God changes your character." Doesn't seem to be the way he works. There's a process. Remember me. Tell the story. Let it go deep. Let it grow deep. Let it change your character. And out of your changed character, changed behavior will flow. If I was Dave, I'd say, oh, I feel like preaching. But I'm not Dave, so I'll just get back to my pulpit here and carry on with the sermon as it is. When Jesus instituted the Passover, what we today call communion, when Jesus instituted communion, he was doing a radical thing. He was taking something that the Israelites had celebrated for 1,500 years and saying, things have changed. He took over that which was the biggest ritual that they had, the story that they had told over and over and over again, and said, the story's changed. The story that you do, the story that you tell has changed. You're doing this to remember me. It's not just some little thing that he did. It was radical. But he kept the purpose the same. What he was telling to do was still the same. Tell the story. Remember. But instead of the Passover, he took it and said, "There's this bread is my body broken for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Against the backdrop of what they'd got together to do, that was an amazing thing to do. Against the backdrop of what they'd been told to do for 1,500 years, that was an amazing thing to do. To do it in the middle of that celebration. They had got together to celebrate the Passover. They had got together to remember God. Do you see there's a seamlessness actually here? It's strange but true. He could have done this at a different time. He didn't. Because part of the Exodus, there was sacrifice. There was a lamb that had to be sacrificed. And the blood of that lamb was to be painted on the doorpost and the lintel of each of the Israelites' house. There was sacrifice that saved them. And Jesus pointed towards his own death and said, I too am going to die. This bread is my body. It's going to get broken. And my blood is going to get poured out for you. Tell the story. Remember. Tell the story. Remember. As followers of Jesus, we know who we are. If you've committed your life to follow Jesus, we know who we are. I started by saying, I'm a child of God. I can only say that because I've heard the story of Jesus. And I've believed and I've responded to that story. I'm his child. He loves me. But I'm still a sinner who's in desperate need of salvation. I'm in desperate need of what Jesus provides. As a follower of Jesus, I know I'm special to God. He's told me so. And he's done a great act of deliverance for me through Jesus' death on the cross. And I also know that the game has changed about what to do about those things that I do wrong. In the old days, it was animal sacrifice and you get a lamb and or whatever and you take it to the temple and it's sacrificed to pay for or to atone for the things that you've done wrong. But Jesus made a different way and he said, that's what this is about. It's a different way. And his death and his sacrifice is enough. Through that death, we receive not just forgiveness of sin, but eternal life. What a deliverance. What a deliverance that we have through Jesus. And so with that, we're going to go to communion. We're going to take communion very soon. But I'm going to read this from Luke chapter 22, verse 19. And he took bread, and when he'd given thanks, he broke it, and he gave it to them, saying, this is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And likewise the cup, after they'd eaten, saying, "This is the cup that's poured out for you. This cup poured out for you is the covenant in my blood." And he encouraged them to drink it. And that's what we're going to do. This is a ritual that Christians have been doing for 2,000 years now. 2,000 years Christians have been doing this ritual. It was very clear, it was a very quickly established as a practice in the early church when it comes to Paul writing to the Corinthians 20 years later. He's got a few words to say about them, saying, "You're not quite doing it right." And said, "Here's a few things." But clearly, this very quickly became a practice of the Christian church. And we've been doing it for 2,000 years. But Jesus' instruction to us is the same. Tell the story. Tell the story of my death and resurrection. Tell the story of my deliverance. Tell the story that it brings people forgiveness in this life and eternal life in the next. Tell the story. So we're going to do that right now. We're going to have Bree come up and play, and we're going to have the opportunity to come forward. There's a station on my left and right. Take the bread, and there's a cup of juice there. Take that with you. I suspect there's a gluten-free option there. Does that look like what that is? Yep. Just in case you need to know, there is a gluten-free option there for those that require that. But take the bread, take the juice, return to your seat. Take the bread in your own time. When you're ready, you can eat the bread. Hold the cup, and we'll drink that all together as a symbol of just the fact that we are one body in Christ. So come forward right now and let's take communion.
Thanks for listening to the Hills Baptist Podcast. If you'd like to partner with us in developing and equipping passionate disciples who love God, love people, and boldly share the gospel, you can do that at hillsbaptist.com/giving. We pray this message has empowered you to live and love more like Jesus. Have an amazing day.